shooting from the lip.
We're taking no prisoners here. Real opinions for real people.
John Gaunt, shooting from the lip.
Hi, good afternoon and welcome to another edition of Shooting from the Lip on Sputnik International with me, John Gaunt. So much to talk about this week. We're not going to mess about. Let me tell you, my guest is the military historian, social commentator and journalist, Mr. Mike Yardley.
Shooting from the Lip.
Good afternoon, Mike.
Hello, John. How are you?
Not too bad. Let's talk about Brexit Boris. He's flying to Brussels. Have we really waited 4.5 years and it's going to be solved over a dinner? Or is this all stage management? Is this all a pantomime? Are we going to get out of the EU, Michael?
I think it's all theatre, John. It's all BS. Of course there'll be some sort of deal. I don't want a deal myself. I'd much rather we came out completely and traded under WTO terms. But the globalists and big money, you know, the great and the good, they want some sort of deal. And there will be a deal. So forget all the theatre that's presented to you on TV. It is coming towards its inevitable conclusion. Possibly the announcement of a deal as some sort of ersatz Christmas present to us. So, no, I don't believe it. And it is an extraordinary mess as well. But we could comment on that ad infinitum. Let's not bother. There will be a deal.
Why do they think they can play us like this, though, Mike?
That's a very good question, isn't it, John? It's the whole of Westminster politics has become a televised Punch and Judy show. I mean, we know really that the real decisions are made not sadly by our own parliament anymore, if they ever were, but by big interest groups, whether that's what I call big money, whether it's the unions, whoever it might be. The people who don't really make a difference are the punters, us, the public. We are really given this illusion that there is a democratic process that functions and that we have a voice. And yet it seems that our voice is more and more reduced in modern Britain. And I think that is a tragedy. And I think the only way forward for Britain, and indeed for all countries, is improved and real democracy, where people really do have a voice, where they're not just electing delegates, but they're electing true representatives that are going to put their point of view across and change the world we live in towards that point of view. But that doesn't happen. And when you look at all the stuff that goes on, whether it's climate change, BLM or whatever, or indeed this, it's clear that we don't really count. Our opinion doesn't really count. There are others who make these decisions and who continually attempt to manipulate and control us. It's all quite depressing.
Okay, let's talk about that in more detail as we go through the agenda today. It's interesting, James Delenpole was on my programme a few weeks ago and he talked about the Great Reset. He also talked about Brexit and said he wanted Brexit just like you do, but he said it's kind of almost become an irrelevance when you compare it to the global pandemic and the way that's being played out and, in his terms, manipulated. What's your view on COVID, and indeed these kind of accusations that what's actually going on is some kind of reset?
Yes, an interesting point. And I think I hacked James off accidentally, probably by saying the people outside Harrods were idiots for congregating in their hundreds without masks on. What do I think? I think this business of the Great Reset is very, very significant, because you talk to most people, they haven't even heard of the Great Reset.
What is it then? Explain to people in very simple terms what it is.
Yeah. Well, if you go to the World Economic Forum, that's the people that do these sort of Davos conferences of the great and the good who go to discuss the economic future of the world. You can watch their propaganda films and you can see a character who looks much like Dr. Strangelove telling us what our future is going to be and telling us, amongst other things, in one of those films, in 2030, you won't own anything, but you will be happy. Well, hey ho. Go into their policy in a little bit more detail and you find the Great Reset consists of three things. One, according to them, a new social contract which will favour the young. Two, decarbonisation. And three, a new green economy. Now, what is this? And I asked somebody in the city who's a close friend what they thought was going on with this. And he said, well, Michael, they're winded. I said, well, what do you mean? Who's winded? The trillionaire class, the trillionaire interests are winded because they think that capitalism is failing. And that if they're going to survive with their vast wealth still in place, they're going to have to rejig capitalism and create capitalism point two, if you like, capitalism mark two, by making it more communist in some areas, more of a collective deal. And it's quite worrying when you explore it and you explore how they might go about that, reading between the lines. And essentially, I think it's probable that what they would do is tax, that they'd like to do, is tax the middle classes, in other words, almost anyone who works, into non-existence. So there'll be a serf class at the bottom, controlled in much the same way that the people in China are now controlled. The middle class will increasingly cease to exist or be so pressured that, you know, it might as well not exist. And then money will also go upwards to the trillionaire class through their massive corporations and interests, and also with taxation in another sense. And we will rejig the world so we are all far more controlled, you know, social credits, all of this sort of stuff. There is a pretense of climate change and carbon tax and all of this sort of stuff is used as the means to reset the world. They've been planning this for a while, and COVID has given them the opportunity.
Okay, but just for people who don't know, who are the members of the World Economic Forum?
The UN, the International Monetary Fund. And when you look at this idea, it stems from stuff that Christine Lagarde was talking about some years ago. But it's all these transnational organizations and some very wealthy corporate interests. But it's a good question. But what's an even better question is, why aren't more people just going to Google, type in WEF Great Reset, and they're quite upfront about what they want to do to us. And it's scary stuff. I mean, it's creating a new sort of Orwellian 1984 future, and they're pretending it's in our own best interests, when of course it isn't in our interests, it's in their interest. And I just wish more people were switched on to it and concerned about it, John.
Okay, very interesting stuff. Some people say, and they're exploiting the COVID pandemic to that end. Are you one of those people?
Oh, I don't think there's any question of that. The COVID pandemic provides an opportunity for a policy idea that was probably first mooted about 5 years ago, and they've been waiting for a way to bring it on to us. So yes, I think no doubt at all, COVID is being used as an excuse to create a new political paradigm, which will involve more control. Perhaps we're heading towards a cashless society. Perhaps we're heading towards Chinese-style social credits, where if you're not, you know, you're not a good boy or a good girl, you won't be able to do this or that. You won't be able to go here or there. You won't have completely free movement anymore. It is a very scary scenario.
Okay, understand that, but that's exploiting a situation. You do believe that COVID is real. You're not a tin hat man, are you? You do actually think this is happening.
That is a very interesting question, John. I'm always skeptical. You know, writers, I think by nature, should be skeptical. I always probe the prevailing truth, the received wisdom. Let's just look at that. I can't give you a yes, no answer just yet, but let's look at the nightly figures the BBC puts out. Total UK deaths. Now, the last one I looked at was 62,033. I think that was last night. And that's, then you read the small print underneath the big red fear-inducing figures on the screen, and it says deaths for any reason within 28 days of a positive test. And then when you start to explore this figure of 60-odd thousand people, you realise that those are not the people that have died because of COVID, but those are people who've died with COVID, who may have been misdiagnosed early on as some sort of bureaucratic convenience, whatever it may be, as well as some people who have died because of COVID. So of that 62,000 that we were told last night, total UK deaths, how many of them have actually died because of this new virus? And that is the $64 billion question. Let's say, for example, that 30,000, about half of that number, have actually died because of CV19. And if that is the case, and I think it's probable that it's going to be somewhere in that area, that is no more than the number of people that quite frequently die of a normal flu.
I accept that, but that's speculative because you started off your whole point by saying, what if it's only 50%? I think we've got to be a little bit careful.
Okay, fair point. But what isn't speculative is that figure that was given last night, 62,033, isn't the number of people that have died because of COVID. Only a proportion of that figure have died because of COVID.
So let's move that on then. So what did you make of V-Day yesterday? people taking the vaccination, and I'll put you on the spot. Are you going to have it? I'm 59. I'm certainly going to have it.
I'm 65 and I've got some underlying health conditions. I'm not sure I'm going to have it,
right,
because I'm concerned about, one, the lack of long-term testing, and also the possibility of genetic modification. Now, I need to gen myself up more on this, John, but if taking this vaccine actually alters my own genetic structure, then I do have doubts about it.
Hang on, let's go back to the first point you made there. Yeah, because you said, you know, the genetic, but also you said about the testing. Well, the testing's had to be done quickly, hasn't it? Because we're in the middle of this pandemic, and it's a worldwide pandemic, Mike.
No, and I'm quite happy that you play devil's advocate to anything that I say, because yes, but you can't have any new medication introduced without significant, at least mid-term, if not long-term testing. And I just, my opinion is that there just hasn't been enough testing yet to be to ensure that this is safe. And you also have to see that governments are giving the pharmaceutical companies a get out on this. They're not going to be able to be sued on it. There isn't going to be any comeback on them.
But again, I would say that's because we're in the middle of the pandemic. And I don't know about you, you talk about freedom so much. I want my freedoms back. I want to be able to fly around the world. I want to be able to go to a pub. I want to start doing these things. Now, I know you've been wearing a mask because I follow what you've been saying on Twitter, but we don't want to live like this anymore. So I think most people, and I think you'd have to accept this, the majority of the population say they'll have the vax. I think it's 20% say they won't. And the majority of the population want to get on with their lives, even though it is true to say there's a lot of distrust or dissatisfaction with Boris's government. Surely the vaccination is one way of moving forward. And at your age and at my age, wouldn't we be daft not to have it? I'll take the risk. What about you?
It's a balance of risk. And I'm just not sure is the truthful answer to your question. I am not sure. I had a flu vaccine recently. I did take that. And I did have side effects to that and felt quite ill afterwards. And that certainly made me think twice about the new vaccine. I also think that whatever you may say, John, it has not been thoroughly enough tested. And I don't think you can get around that. There just hasn't been time enough to do it.
No, there hasn't. We agree with that.
I'm scientifically trained myself in the dim and distant past. And this, whatever way you look at it, it has been rushed through.
Okay,
now,
well,
as
fair
you
enough,
say
though,
quite correctly, there is a balance of risk.
Okay.
And some people may think that that is a risk worth taking. But then I come back myself to exploring the reality of CV19. Now, I know no one in my immediate circle who's had this illness. And I ask absolutely everyone I speak to whether they know anyone who's had CV19. And I'll tell
you.
Well,
I know several people, not just in this country.
Understood.
But hang on a minute. Not just in this country, but in Italy as well. We can't work our political viewpoint from, I don't know anyone who's had it.
Understood, John. But I've done this a bit more thoroughly. I've asked hundreds of people in the UK, in Italy, in the States. And let me just tell you what I discovered from that, because people will be interested. I would say 80% or so of people I speak to in the UK say that they don't know anyone who's had it, or they might have some, you know, very distant connection to one person who's had it but recovered. Some people in the UK, a much smaller percentage, will say, yes, I know several people who've had it. And then I have other people who've come to me. I've had messages on social media where people are upset because they've had an elderly relative that's died of something else, but it's been put down to CV19 and they didn't know what to do about it. And they messaged me to tell me that. So I would say in the UK, this illness, by my observation, which may be inaccurate, is far less prevalent than we've been led to believe by the media. However,
hold on, let's just test that. If that's correct, then why are we? You would be against the lockdowns. You wouldn't be wearing a mask. You'd just be saying, let this rip. It's nothing to worry about. Is that your viewpoint?
No, I'm not saying that. I believe in prudence. And I would say I do wear a mask when I go into shops. I have a very well thought through personal attitude towards this stuff. I don't wear a mask outside. I do wear a mask when I go into shops because I think it's prudent and polite. I think the lockdown has been a complete waste of time and has done fearful damage to our economy and to our psychology. And I do speak as a psychologist. I think it's led to all sorts of problems and anxieties. There's absolute, there's the real epidemic at the moment is depression caused by lockdown, amongst other things. But I do continually, skeptically consider the official line. And I think we have been, I think if you put yourself in the position of Boris and his government, I can understand what's happened. They're frightened of the situation. They're frightened of the media. So they want to, you know, they've decided that they're going to go down this course of lockdown or whatever, and then they have to persuade the British public to act accordingly. And to get the British public to act accordingly, you get the BBC to frighten everybody silly. Now, that's not necessarily the reality, though. That's what they may perceive as a necessity to control the so-called pandemic or epidemic or whatever it is.
Let's leave it there for a moment because I've got to go to a break. We'll go to a break and then we'll pursue this further. You're listening to The John Gaunt Show. It's Shooting from the Lip. It's Sputnik International with my guest today, Mike Yardley.
Shooting from the Lip.
We're taking no prisoners here. Real opinions for real people.
John Gaunt. Shooting from the Lip.
Hi, welcome back to the second half of Shooting from the Lip with my special guest, Mike Yardley. A lot of cynicism there, Mike, but you're still not coming down and saying you won't have the vax, are you?
I haven't made the decision yet, John. I'm still very concerned. Here's the big deal for me. If the BBC was coming on every night and telling me a real figure for the number of people in the UK who are actually dying because of CV19, I might be more willing to accept all the rest of it. But instead of doing that, what I'm bombarded with every night is propaganda. Now, you mentioned the V-Day images that we saw, and I thought they were rather weird. I mean, it was people almost having a religious experience as they...
Hang on a minute. Didn't you think it was exciting that we were leading the way and that these old-age pensioners, including that 90-year-old lady from Coventry, she was just saying, I don't want to die. I'm going to take it. What's wrong with that?
Well, I am completely understanding that. And, of course, I could be completely wrong, but people like me and you have a duty to question the official line. And if the official line is correct, if it's all true, then our questioning will only reveal the truth. But the more that I observe this, the more that I question it, the more that I see a lot of the things that we're being told aren't true or misleading. I would like, for example, to know what the real world occupancy of intensive care units has been during the crisis. I would like to know why I have so many undertakers amongst my, you know, 50-odd thousand social media contacts coming and messaging me and saying that they're not seeing all these CV cases. And in a couple of cases, they'd stocked up on coffins which weren't used. No, I am sceptical, and I think we should all remain sceptical, because quite clearly, what is without doubt, when you look at what's being thrown at us, there is a deliberate attempt to manipulate us and control us at the moment. Perhaps understandably so if you were in the position of government, but nevertheless, I think the BBC has gone completely over the top. They terrified us from the beginning with all their COVID propaganda. I mean, it was just non-stop COVID Project Fear.
Okay, accept that. I've got to move on, Mike, because there's other things we need to get into the programme today. You talk about the BBC, you talk about media propaganda. What did you make of the ensuing scandal that seemed, or developing scandal, around Kay Burley and Beth Rigby and 10 staff from Sky who ignored completely the restrictions, you might call them, the laws, the rules, and went out on the booze this weekend, after berating people like Dominic Cummings, people like Rita Ora over the past few weeks? It looks like they might lose their jobs. What do you make of it?
Well, I'm always reluctant to comment on individual cases or people, but I have no doubt that with the way this story is circulating, that there are going to be accusations of hypocrisy. And generally, what I'm reminded of, and I often make the parallel between the modern media and the church in the Middle Ages. I mean, the BBC and Sky, or the collective of the media, remind me very much of the church in the Middle Ages as an alternative power to the king, to the state. And they're always, you know, they're vying for power, wealth, ambition, whatever it may be. And if you take that analogy, you can imagine the priest in the pulpit who's preaching to his flock and telling them not to do this or that sort of sinful behaviour, but in private is actually, you know, sitting away quite merrily.
Yeah, we've had loads of examples of that, haven't we, recently? Go on.
Yeah, I mean, well, the Catholic Church got much criticised for that. And, you know, hence Martin Luther King. And I suspect the BBC and the broader media are going to be much criticised after this crisis, because I think many people have been unhappy with the way that they have really not done the nation a service. They've actually conspired to frighten everybody. And they haven't, more to the point, they haven't informed us very well. And not only have they not informed us very well on social media and elsewhere, you can't even discuss these topics now. Now, you might say that, you know, somebody who was an anti-vaxxer is a tinfoil hat sort of person. I'm not an anti-vaxxer, and I don't think I wear a tinfoil hat. But I don't mind coexisting with people who completely oppose the official line, because I think free speech is a good thing, and because I think the truth always out.
No, but I I do object to these people having protests in the major cities, not wearing masks, putting police officers at risk. The people outside Harrods that you talked about before were largely travellers. I do object to that, Mike, and no doubt you do, because you wear a mask when you're out and about. So these people, it's okay to have these views.
You're coming into a very interesting area,
John. It's not okay for them to put the rest of us at risk, is it?
No, it's not. But that is another point. I mean, I think of all the measures to counter CV19, insofar as it does exist, social distancing is probably the most important.
Yes.
I wear a mask mainly to be polite to other people in shops, but also because I think there's probably, you know, some case that the splutter that may come out of you might infect other people. What I find absolutely amazing is seeing people sitting in their cars wearing a mask in the street. I don't really see there's much point to that.
All right, let's move on to some other stories so that we get a rounded view of where you are at the moment. This big story about the booing at Millwall, was that racist or was that just anti-BLM, the organisation?
But I think we're all sort of, you know, there is a group of us, and you and I may be in that group, that's just fed up with being told what we should think and how we should think and all the PC stuff that goes with it, including BLM, including taking the knee. I mean, I despise racism. I've talked to lots of black people over the years, and they've told me about their experience of racism. And that actually, I have to say, probably changed my own attitude to it. Racism is a disgusting and horrible thing. It's hateful. And I oppose hatefulness. But what I'd also oppose is the propaganda, the manipulation and control of BLM and other PC stuff. And it is my opinion that it is not really the point whether we're talking about transgender people, black people, women, whatever it might be, even the environment. I don't think the issue is the issue. I think the issue is the increasing attempt to control what we think and not let people come to their own reasoned individual opinions. The priests and priestesses of political correctness are increasingly being empowered to tell us what we should do and think. And I despise that. I think it's a terrible thing. And I would include within that a lot of the BLM stuff.
Yeah. And of course, a lot of that, none of these people have ever been elected. It hasn't been part of a manifesto. What did you make of the Jamaican 50 convicted people, murderers, rapists, etc., who were meant to be deported and only 13 got deported because of last minute, and I mean last minute, they were 3 or 4 hours from the plane taken off by human rights lawyers and activists and actresses. What do you make of that? Does that undermine our justice system and undermine Priti Patel?
We never seem to really get tough with all these foreign criminals that wind up here. Only a small proportion of them ever seem to get deported. I once walked down a road in London at Pride Street with a human rights lawyer. And we were going past all these little businesses. And they were things like particularly phone shops and stuff like that. And she was saying to me as we were walking along the pavement, no, they're clients of mine. And these were all people with running human rights cases because they'd claimed asylum and were about to be deported. And they're all claiming benefits as well. And they were all working. I'm, you know, a tough, old-fashioned guy in some ways. I'm really fed up with all the people that seem to be ripping our country off. And don't tell me they're not tens of thousands or maybe more out there, because they are. And the cost must be enormous. I mean, if you look at the recent furlough stuff and the grants that were paid out as a result of the CV19 economic measures, I think they already think £2 billion has been fraudulently taken from the Exchequer by people dishonestly claiming this sort of stuff. I'm sorry, I think you've got to get tough. And I think I'm not sure we will get tough now. I think it's probably too late. But I think our country has changed and will never go back. Well, you can never go back to what you were. But I think our country has been damaged by it.
Do you think it will help by being out of the EU?
To be honest, probably not much. I think the damage is so profound now. I'm not quite sure how I read the future. I think we are in the midst of huge change at the moment. And where that change will lead, I don't know. There is a possibility of bad stuff coming, I'm afraid. I don't want to go into any more detail than that. But I mean, I wouldn't be surprised if there was another world war.
How would you get out of the pandemic? We've only got 60 or 70 seconds left, Mike. Is it now time to lift all restrictions rather than they're suggesting London could go into tier three this weekend? What would you want to see happen?
I'd like to see lockdown taken down immediately. I would like people to behave individually more responsibly, because when you saw those people outside Harrods, you know, cheek by jowl, no masks, that's just being bloody stupid.
I agree.
And even if you have your doubts about the official line on CV19, there's no point in being, you know, what the Irish would call an idiot. Be sensible. Think about other people. Be a bit responsible. Be a grown up. It seems to me that what we're having at the moment is people are sort of giving up and just behaving in an insane, selfish manner. No, let's get focused back. Let's get back on track. Let's refine purpose and hope. And let's recognise that there are things like young people who do feel very left out at the moment, who are concerned about their future and need to be shown a clear way forward so they can become, you know, part of a functioning society, which most of all needs to become truly democratic, with proper democratic representation, a society where people feel that their voice actually counts. At the moment, most people are sitting at home in a sort of daze, watching TV, living very selfish lives, but we're all disconnected. If we're going to succeed, if we're going to get out of this, we're going to have to reconnect.
I think that's a great way to end the show. Thank you very much indeed. That was Mike Yardley, the military historian and social commentator. I'm John Gaunt. You've been listening to Shooting from the Lip on Sputnik International. Thanks for listening.
Shooting from the Lip.
If you've got a view, I want to hear it. If you agree, I want to hear it. If you disagree, get in touch. Tell me why I'm wrong, but you better have a good argument.
This is Shooting from the Lip.